The scientific community mobilized in ways never before seen to develop vaccines against COVID-19. Now, as we pass a year since lockdowns began, we're transitioning into a new phase, how to get these vaccines distributed quickly and efficiently. Dr. Sunny Jha, Lauren Robinson, and Jay Bott are on the front lines in their communities and have witnessed firsthand the pain caused by the disease, the progress we've made in a short amount of time, and the fear in patients as vaccine distribution ramps up. As Dr. Bott notes, fear is natural and should be acknowledged, but decades of accumulated scientific knowledge says the vaccines are safe.
What's really clear and what we've been telling our community and coalition on This Is Our Shot is that the work and the study around vaccines has been in play for a long time. Coronavirus were first researched in the 1960s, 80 years ago. Success in the mRNA platform, so-called new technology, was first published in the prestigious journal Science in the 1990s. That's 31 years ago. The largest wealth of scientific knowledge on the inner workings of coronavirus happened during SARS 18 years ago. And so after hundreds of years of scientific advancement and the fact that these vaccines went through the same process of rigorous review through the FDA and other bodies than any other vaccine we've put forth, we have three highly effective and safe vaccines that prevent hospitalization and death.
We'll talk vaccine effectiveness, how doctors are trying to make sure different populations both inside and outside of major cities are able to access the vaccine, and how the Presidential Leadership Scholars Program helped inspire a large group of doctors to work together to make sure their voices are heard through the hashtag ThisIsOurShot movement. I'm Andrew Kaufman, and this is The Strategist, presented by the George W. Bush Presidential Center. We set up a panel discussion of esteemed medical doctors to talk about what's on everybody's mind, the COVID-19 vaccine. Our twist is that all three of our panelists are presidential leadership scholars who have teamed up for the hashtag ThisIsOurShot movement. So let's kick it off by going around the horn for some quick introductions. First up, Dr. Jay Bott.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here with my colleagues and friends and to talk about this really important topic. I'm a primary care internal medicine physician on the south side of Chicago, geriatrician, and work to try to redesign care for vulnerable populations here in Chicago.
Awesome. Next up, Dr. Lauren Robinson.
Sure. Thanks so much for having us here today. I am the Chief Medical Officer and Vice President of Medical Affairs at Christus St. Michael Health System in Texarkana, Texas. We're a unique city where we are not quite rural, not quite urban, but we span two states. So we've got half Arkansas, half Texas, best of both worlds, and look forward to joining the conversation today.
Absolutely. We're glad you're here. And finally, our ringleader, Dr. Sunny Jha, who helped get this all set up.
Sunny Jha, I'm an anesthesiologist right now at the Houston Methodist Hospital in Houston, Texas. Prior to that, I was at University of Southern California in LA for the past 3.5 years, just pivoted this direction to help build out a new training program in anesthesiology here.
Well, thanks again for being here, y'all. So let's get right into vaccine talk. As we record this in March, demand is still outpacing supply for the vaccine at the moment. All indications are this isn't going to be true for much longer. We're going to have more supply than demand. There's a lot of great, well-researched information about the vaccine out there, but there's also a lot of misinformation. So, Dr. Jha, can you start off by telling us about the hashtag ThisIsOurShot movement and what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, so the hashtag ThisIsOurShot was more or less born out of the idea that we as healthcare workers can do something and should be doing something to combat the vaccine misinformation, disinformation, and hesitancy that were kind of prevailing the conversation, kind of taking over the conversation, preventing folks from getting access to the right information, making things worse potentially as far as our ability to combat this public health disaster. So we felt as clinicians, not only we have a duty to take care of our patients at the bedside, but we have an obligation to do more outside of the hospital, outside of the medical clinics. So that's where it was born. We're basically aligning, trying to unite and align healthcare workers across the country, across the world, to combat misinformation, hesitancy, and disinformation, and to promote the COVID vaccine as a safe way to return back to normal.
Dr. Jha said it right. I think it's really about elevating the voices of health heroes to build vaccine trust for a COVID-free world. And we're stronger when we're united in our messaging. And we do this by telling stories on the front line of how people we've spoken to have gotten vaccinated, what they've struggled with. And all of that is really giving us a lot of juice to get out in communities and continue to fight misinformation and disinformation so that we can get America vaccinated.
I think, you know, I would add that this is one of the first times that I've seen in, and I say my adult medical life, where you've got public health, pharma, healthcare, primary care specialists all on the same page. You know, something that is as simple as the flu shot. I have physicians saying, hey, I'm not going to take that flu shot. You can't make me. Those same doctors are the same ones who are like, hey, I'm interested in taking this COVID-19 vaccine. And my same doctors who are our pediatricians or universal vaxxers, as I'll call them, are also signing up. And so when you have people across the board from all walks of life, and I think an important piece of it is also people from communities that have been discriminated against or had negative experiences with the healthcare complex. When you have people of all of those communities coming forward and saying, this is our shot, this is my shot, I got my shot, and I'm still here, I think it's making a big difference.
So, Dr. Robinson, you mentioned that you're hearing universally from other medical professionals that this is safe. What are you hearing from your patients, though? Is there hesitancy there in Texarkana?
So, you know, it's interesting. We did a survey of our providers, and at first there was only about 20% interest. And once the vaccine actually got here, our providers are first in line. I think we had this almost unique social experiment where we use public health science to say, hey, our front lines need to go first because we need to make sure they're healthy to take care of patients. And so we had this pretty much an experiment where all the healthcare providers went first. Nobody grew a third arm or a second head. And so the public was like, oh, wow, they're all still here. They're pretty healthy. We don't see as many people having to take off work and they're able to take care of our COVID patients. They can take care of me. It must be safe for me. And I think that has started to change the tide of the conversations. And so for our patients, that's huge, but also for the other people who work in the hospital. The people who work in the hospital are also our community members who said, I don't know about this vaccine that came out so fast, or there are so many, or who's doing this, or who was president when it was approved and when it finally got to my community. And all of those people are saying, now I've had time to look and see this real-time clinical trial with people I know, and they're okay. And they're bringing the messages to the churches. They're bringing the messages to the temples, the synagogues, the community centers. You know, in Texas, I don't know that we mask as much as some of the other places around the country, but folks are still very interested in getting that vaccine. And so that's very encouraging to see.
Yep. Andrew, I was going to jump in and just say another thing to add what Dr. Robinson had just spoken about is, I think there's also this conversation about the focus on vaccine hesitancy is detracted some attention away from the other reasons people of color and those living in underserved communities like the ones I care for are not getting vaccinated. A lack of access, education, community support. You know, people are focused on other important needs that may come ahead of health for them because they're just trying to make it every day. And the perpetuation of myths create barriers to vaccine uptake. And so I think with the most recent data from several weeks ago, according to the CDC, only 7% of Black Americans, 9% of Hispanics, and 2% of Native Americans have received their first dose. So we continue to have a lot of work to do. But just last week on Wednesday night, over 5 hours, we vaccinated 300 people from the community. And I was just really encouraged to see this interest for folks who want to get back to the things they know and love and they want to do.
I think it's important what both Dr. Robinson and Dr. Bott just mentioned is that the fact is the community is recognizing that we're failing to meet some populations, specific populations that are incredibly high at risk. Black and brown populations, for example, are much more high risk for contracting this virus and having much more lethal consequences from it. And I think we're seeing the community kind of realizing that, a community stepping up and trying to reach out to those folks directly. And that's what makes it such a great experience to see as society is evolving, as we're trying to finding out these missing gaps, these pieces where we can't get folks vaccinated. Society is stepping in with mobile vaccination clinics, reaching out directly to those populations. I think as we see more and more of that, as supply increases, I think you're going to start to see more and more of that. And hopefully we'll see us start to really break down those numbers of those resistant populations for whatever reason, whether it's access, not enough time, not enough trust, whatever it might be. Hopefully we can kind of break down those barriers and get those folks vaccinated.
Dr. Bott, you brought up an interesting point I'd like to explore a little further. So here in Texas, you can get vaccinated in any county, not just the one you live in. And I'm internet savvy, so I went online and I found all the various Health and Human Services websites in Dallas County, Collin County, Tarrant County, Denton County. They're all a reasonable drive from where I live, and I registered myself and my elderly parents. really everywhere I could. I had the time and tools to do so, and it's encouraged, but as we saw during lockdown, internet access is not universal. Are we creating another digital divide?
Yeah, I absolutely think so, and I agree with the challenges, not only are people like you and others facing on the internet, but also those that may not have access to the internet, rural communities, those without broadband, those that are kind of homebound and not sure where they can go for the vaccine. I mean, we just took care of a group of people recently who couldn't get to a place for vaccination, so we brought it to them. I think that in order to level the playing field, you got to go low tech at times. And I think make it as easy as possible for folks to get the shot.
Even with, hashtag this is our shot, for example, we're looking at over 375 million impressions, partnered with 45 different organizations now and growing. The fact of the matter is, as you hit it on the head, there's a certain aspect of the public that doesn't have access to digital literacy, doesn't have access to digital, just digital tools, period, that are not really, we're not really able to break through this into this population. And that's where you're really seeing the divide there. And that's the population that actually needs access the most. That's the population that needs access to the information and the shots the most. And for that very reason, we're kind of firewalled or siloed off them, which is very, very hard for us to break through and get access to them, both digitally, in their face, and to get the shots as well.
Yeah, no, I think, and the only piece I'd add is that, I think it's important for so many of these communities to address the trust issue first and to say, hey, we know that there's this history. I think in Black and Brown communities, it's to say, we know that systemic racism exists. We know that it still exists. It happened. We know about Henrietta Lacks. We know about the Tuskegee experiment. We acknowledge that that happened. We also acknowledge that there are things that we need to do better. And we know that COVID-19 has really blown up and shown, with these disparities with COVID-19 that reflect other disparities for these communities. But this is where we as a health community and a healthcare community can stand in the gap. And that means making sure that you've got a reliable, internet system for folks who have internet. For folks who don't, make sure that you have a call center that works. We have a hub here set up in Texarkana. Our call center is not in Texarkana. And so when you call somebody and somebody local is trying to get directions or ask questions and someone is using a mapping software that may not be great and trying to tell them where to go, that can be a challenge. When you're waiting online on hold for 20 minutes, that can be very frustrating, and then people hang up. And so that is difficult also. And then I think the other piece of just the logistics of vaccine supply, we are actually taking a really long time to fill our hub. It's taking days and days, and it's not like in some of the major metropolis areas where it takes, 5 minutes and Houston is full. We have people flying from Mexico City to Dallas and then driving a car from Dallas to Texarkana to get their vaccine. And then the other piece of it is, which vaccine do you take where? And so we can kind of get into further conversation about which vaccine you use and where and how. But the advantage of having a one-shot deal and making it this is our shot versus this is our shots is if you have one shot and you can go to a community and they agree and are interested in getting a vaccine, for folks who may not have a cell phone that you need to call and remind about a second appointment, or maybe moving out of the area, or for people who suffer with substance abuse or mental health issues, it's hard enough keeping up with day-to-day life without remembering where a tiny card could tell you where to come back for a second dose is. And so that's where we as a healthcare community need to go to a community and say, hey, we're here, we're setting up shop. If you're interested, come on down.
So for what you guys have seen, right now, supply is still, or demand is outpacing supply. How far are we from flipping that switch? How far are we from being able to say, hey, if you want a vaccine, just come on down to CVS or to your local mega center and get a vaccine? How far away are we from that?
I think it depends on your geographical area. So I think the narrative in Texarkana is very different than even the rest of Texas. We were designated as a hub and we were all excited in Texarkana and thought we're going to be the site that's taking care of the whole community. And just this week, we've got our Walmarts in town who have the vaccine. We have our CVS that has the vaccine. Our local local state health center got 1,000 doses of Johnson & Johnson. And so they did half of them on Monday and they're doing half today. We get 2,000 a week. And we're having a 30% no-show rate because by the time someone registers on Monday to get a vaccine on Saturday, they're already able to get it somewhere else in our community. So we're lucky that way. But we're seeing a lot of vaccine tourism because of that. So people coming from all over. We've had someone from Italy who came and got vaccinated in Texarkana. So, you know, it's, you know, you hear one story, you hear one story, but it'll be interesting. And that's the other piece, is how fast is the vaccine supply here going to slow down so that we can reallocate it to somewhere that is burning through them much more quickly than we are.
Yeah, I would agree with Dr. Robinson. I think that this is, you know, going to open up in time, April, May, and with, I think, President Biden and the ambitious work that they're trying to do. I think this is really a goal front and center. But the other thing I'd point out is, you know, there are 150 counties where there's no pharmacy. Nearly 4.8 million people live in a county where there's only one pharmacy for every 10,000 residents or more. So we know that, you know, there has to be different channels and places where people can access these vaccines. So this notion of pharmacy deserts is really important. And we've got to do everything we can to meet people where they are, to get the vaccines to them. And I think that, you know, we'll be able to get there soon. It's just tough right now. And as more vaccines come online, that'll even be easier.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, I think what I envisioned even months ago when the vaccine, prior to even coming out, is it was always going to, the biggest problem is going to be the last mile. The last mile distribution, getting the shots from actually the refrigerator to the arm. And that's still proven to be a difficult task, whether it's folks that are picking the strawberries in the California Central Valley, whether it's the folks that are living in a rural county that has their only hospital in town shut down because they couldn't handle the financial stresses from COVID or any number of things here. But I think, you know, now that we're in, you know, utilizing FEMA, we're utilizing these mass vaccination sites, we're starting to have that excess supplier transition to the period of where demand and supply are getting more or less hopefully going to become equal and eventually surpass, especially with the new manufacturers being coming online, with J&J just being approved recently and it being a one-shot deal. I think hopefully we'll reach to a point where it'll be plentiful and everyone will have access to it whenever they need.
And I would add that the other important thing that is that we're learning. And I think you know, the ABC News analysis I mentioned about pharmacy deserts earlier, in addition to that, there are places where there are a lot of places, whether it's the United Center Hub in Chicago or other facilities across the country. But we're learning how to get faster, better at this in terms of our rollout to deliver those shots and arms.
So how... Some news stories you'll read are say we're so close to being to life returning to normal. You'll read another news story that says we are this close to having another surge and things going back to the way they were a few months ago. Where's the reality? Are we closer to the finish line, or are we closer to the starting line? Dr. Bott, why don't you start?
So I think that we have seen progress certainly in the last several months, and I think that that's to be celebrated. Imagine how much we've done from a vaccine and treatment standpoint is just scientifically super exciting and a miracle, and we should celebrate that. I do think it's a race against the variants in some ways, that, you know, we've got places opening up. We've got, you know, the behaviors that we know work are loosening a bit in different places around the country. And so we've got to be really careful that we stay focused on vaccination and doing the public health measures that work and following the CDC guidance. Because if we don't do that, then I could see us potentially having another surge in the fall.
As we hear about the different vaccines too, now another challenge coming up is some people will say, well, I don't want an mRNA vaccine because that technology is too new, or I don't want the Johnson & Johnson vaccine because this test said it only had 60% effectiveness versus 85 or 90%. Dr. Jha, what's your response as part of This Is Our Shot, or really at all to those different types of now vaccination pickiness?
Yeah, my deal is just get a shot. I don't care which one it is. Just get a shot, please, because we've shown the shots are incredibly, incredibly effective, if not 100% effective at eliminating severe hospitalization or death from this. And that's really, really awesome. I don't think anyone a year ago when this was just coming out, none of us had even dreamed about a shot or multiple shots in this case. Multiple providers, multiple vaccinations that provide this level of definitive treatment, essentially, or definitive prevention. So at this point, my goal and what I tell people is, like, I don't care what you think about mRNA versus adenovirus vectors. Just get a shot. Unless you have a PhD in viral, you know, bioengineering, just trust in the science, trust in the folks that are developing this, trust in your physicians, trust in your community, and look around and see what's happening around you now. We have a lot of people that are vaccinated. Chances are you're more likely to know somebody who's vaccinated than not. Ask them what their experiences were. Ask them how that second shot side effects profile was for them. But recognize that even if you're concerned about these things, that you're not alone to be concerned. It's okay to be concerned. I could tell you that the second shot side effect issues from the shots are way better than getting COVID. I could tell you that for a fact. And I'm willing to bet anybody who's had COVID will and the shot will probably say exactly the same thing. So there's reasons to be hesitant, but at the same time, I think if you do your homework, if you look at the data, if you look at the research, if you trust in those around you, you'll recognize that getting the shot is, it makes sense. It just makes sense.
So, I completely agree with Dr. John. I think it starts, with certainly empathy, listening, validating fears, validating what people are telling you. But what's really clear and what we've been telling our community and coalition on This Is Our Shot is that, this issue, the work and the study around vaccines has been in play for a long time. Coronavirus were first researched in the 1960s, 80 years ago. Success in the mRNA platform, so-called new technology, was first published in the prestigious journal Science in the 1990s. That's 31 years ago. The largest wealth of scientific knowledge on the inner workings of coronavirus happened during SARS 18 years ago. And so after hundreds of years of scientific advancement and the fact that these vaccines went through the same process of rigorous review through the FDA and other bodies than any other vaccine we've put forth, we have three highly effective and safe vaccines that prevent hospitalization and death. So take the one you can get and do it quickly, because there are also variants and other things at play, that might become a problem. So that's what I would say, to that. And I think we got to continue to fight misinformation and disinformation.
And Dr. Robinson, as chief of medicine there, early on in the pandemic, we heard a lot about exhaustion from nurses and doctors and that are working long hours and seeing people in just horrible states for weeks and weeks on end. I feel like I'm hearing that story less and less. How are the doctors at your organization holding up, and the nurses and all the people that are working to treat this disease?
So, I think this is, I came to work at a hospital from government. And so I said, this is evidence of government that works. I was very surprised that the vaccine rolled out here before the winter holidays. I had thought, okay, COVID's going crazy. We're going to have this 2 weeks where we refresh and slow down, and then the vaccine will get here in January. The FDA met mid-December, and vaccine was here in Texarkana, where, we're rural America, by December 17th. And I had never seen, the delivery services or government work that fast. And then, the vaccines work. And I think that instilled a lot of hope into our patients, into our communities, and then, into our physicians and our nurses. Here in Texas, we have a lot of people who've come from all over Texas and all over the country to help, just because early on, I think California, Texas, and New York, and then, soon after Chicago also, were really impacted and were kind of blasted all over the news about, look how dire this is. And, people came forward to help. And so we have nurses, respiratory therapists, pharmacists, physicians here from all over helping out. And as our numbers have come down, those people have been able to kind of step away, and we've been able to kind of recover as a community. But we've had so much outpouring of people just willing to go above and beyond. I think the other piece of it is when it impacts one of your own. I think when your own physicians or you see your colleague taken down by COVID-19 or taken out temporarily and then having to go on sick leave and come back, it humbles you to remember that, you were a person before you got these degrees. And it really, I think, reaffirms our commitment to the practice of medicine and why we all chose this as a journey and path of service. And now that the numbers are coming down, I think the tenor of things has calmed down. Texas is, as you've heard from our governor, wide open for business. And I think that is really re-energizing the medical staff, our whole community, and our nursing staff as well. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of Easter break, spring break session of these next few weeks plays out as we move into later April and May. And if the variants are here, if we're going to see that impact now or in the fall, or and or kind of how that will look for vaccination for the fall. But I think that we're in a good spot, and I think that people are positive and ready for positivity and ready to continue taking care of patients.
So I teased at the beginning that the three of you know each other from the Presidential Leadership Scholars Program, which is, you know, obviously how the Bush Institute got to know you guys. Sunny, how did this Is Our Shot campaign get started? What you're the organizer, right? How did you get this going?
Yeah, well, I was part of the team that helped get this launched. But the fact of the matter is that I think this is why PLS was created, for society's leaders to come together and chat and try to tackle these phenomenal challenges facing our society, facing our country, facing the world. So in a lot of ways, I think PLS prepared us for this moment. And I feel like we all feel compelled to try to do whatever it is we can to make a difference. And I think PLS has armed us with the ability to make a difference. And, you know, we just had to reach across our networks. You know, Jay is probably one of the biggest Rolodexes in healthcare. And you want something done in healthcare, first guy you call is Jay Bott. Second guy you call is Jay Bott. Third guy you call is Jay Bott. Fourth guy, you go visit him if he doesn't call you back and knock on his door in Chicago. And then that's how you get to Jay Bott. And so I think in a lot of ways, not only were we able to form a network amongst the actual frontline healthcare workers within PLS, but at the same time, some of the folks that are not necessarily involved in healthcare. One individual we reached out to is Renee DeRista from PLS as well, and she does everything related to manipulation of social media and the research in that realm. Just phenomenal work she puts out, and you know, like, we got to reach out to Renee because this is totally in her wheelhouse of how social media is being manipulated to more or less manipulate folks and spread this disinformation, misinformation, and all that. So, you know, with her help, we're actually creating a surveillance network, a surveillance tool to monitor and counter the narratives that we see coming out of the anti-vaxxers, to be coming out of the state actors that are actually playing an increasingly large part in this misinformation campaign that's happening, where you see like countries like Russia that are really trying to engage in vaccine level diplomacy to sow mistrust in Pfizer and Moderna, in, you know, for the ability to try to leverage their own vaccine to sell to other nations. So in a lot of ways, this is not just a frontline medical conflict. This is a diplomatic worldwide conflict. And I think this is why PLS was created, to try to tackle these tremendous, tremendous, tremendous challenges facing our society and globe.
You know, I think the other piece about PLS that is amazing and that really helped to recenter me, and I think especially across our class, is this conversation about core values and how you may have core values that you're at odds with your colleagues about. But there are certain core values that if you are committed to doing the work, that you can find that you share core values with the people that you work with, that you live with, that you, you know, at one point had a social life with. And so I think that was a really helpful lesson as we looked at this pandemic, where the pandemic didn't care kind of who you voted for, if you voted, what color you were, your socioeconomic class. There was really no discriminating factor. And so we all had to come together and say, you know, what are these lessons that I learned in PLS and how do I bring people in? You know, in my C-suite, it's easy because we're all in the C-suite and we know we're used to work together. But we have to make these coalitions with the community. We've got to talk to people who have power, who have connections. We've got to talk to people who don't have connections, who don't have power, who are overrepresented in these patient populations that are showing up on our doors. And so it really was just a unique moment, I think, in American history, no matter where in this country you're planted, for us to really harness those core values and think about those core values conversations that carried us through PLS and really encouraged us to bring out the best of what it is to be an American.
And I would just echo what Dr. Robinson said. I think these core values thread through and they create the relational ways that we organize and come together and move this. And I remember, you know, I would agree with Dr. Jha. I remember where I was. I was on the treadmill trying to get a workout in, having this strategic conversation in early November to figure out what are we going to do about This Is Our Shot and try to bring this community together. And I, you know, was drawing upon the lessons from PLS around coalition building and how do we create public-private partnerships. And all throughout this past year, you know, PLS alumni and the PLS community have shown up time and time again in different ways. From technology to manufacturing to how do you community organize to community partners they have to funding, and just to like push you on your own thinking about certain issues to challenge you on that so that you get to the best place. It doesn't matter that they may come from a different background or experience, but you can have that dialogue because of that experience and shared experience, you know, that we've had together through PLS and a recognition of that, you know, in diversity can come strength and power to make a big difference around these challenging, vexing problems that require cross-sector collaboration. And President Bush, President Clinton, you know, have just shown their leadership by example, along with the whole PLS team throughout this past year. And we've seen stories of this through our alumni webinars and other conversations. So it's just been incredible to draw upon the lessons. And I don't think we could have made the impact, you know, together that we've been able to drive forward if it had not been for PLS.
Yeah. And speaking of Presidents Bush and Clinton, it was great to see those two, along with Presidents Obama and Carter, getting their shots through the campaign with the Ad Council. And even though maybe this time you could say they're following in your steps.
It's great to see. And I think the more the leadership does that, the more that people in the community or influencers do that, the more that we're going to get further on vaccination.
Well, we've taken up 30 minutes of your time, and I promise that's all I would take from your busy schedules of seeing patients and doing this really important work. Really appreciate hearing your perspectives from the front lines. Dr. Jha, Dr. Robinson, Dr. Bhatt, thank you again so much for spending this time with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andy. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Andy.
Absolutely. Let's do this again soon, maybe even all sitting around a table together instead of here on Zoom.
Definitely.
Sounds great. Well, we appreciate everything that you all do and the whole PLS community. They've just been really strong, and I know they fire me up every day.
This is exactly why we do it, so the great minds like y'all's can get together and make a difference.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
When you get your vaccine, be sure to share on social media with hashtag ThisIsOurShot. And you can also learn more about This Is Our Shot at thisisourshot.info. And hear more from the Presidential Leadership Scholars at www.presidentialleadershipscholars.org. If you enjoyed this episode of The Strategist, please leave a review or let us know on social media. Tag us at the Bush Center or at PLS Program. Thank you for listening.